Hey everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And it's time for
Guilty.
That's one. I didn't get to 34.
You're halfway there. Oh, living on.
So we are re-recording the beginning of this little shindig today because we did it this morning and then you went off to do your other show and then all Trump broke loose.
Guilty on 34. Isn't it
Jaws.
A little bit bizarro land to think that a former U.S. president is now a convicted felon?
I mean, yes and no with this guy.
even when Nixon was about to be charged, mm-hmm. right, in Watergate, he resigned and then he was, you know.
Yeah.
He was the only one of his chaos makers back then to not go to jail because he was pardoned. But I just find it so... On one hand, I'm really pleased that the justice system works, even though it's way too slow. But on the other hand, it's very sad for America.
And I just watched Woodward and Bernstein on CNN. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, they were saying like Nixon was bad, all the president's men, but this guy is beyond the pale. And, it's a statement on what's going on in America and that doesn't really matter. It's not going to impact his campaign necessarily. It's like, oh my God, it's crazy. I mean, from a spin point of view, the fact that, they talk about the ultimate spinorama of this whole issue and how it's being used as a weapon. And it's just.
After we did the podcast, then I went and recorded Steele and Vance twice, yep. Because of course the breaking news happened in the middle of us recording the show and it's like, okay, well, let's start again. And then I came home, I had to drive my son to baseball and I opted to put on my Sirius XM with Brady in the car and we were listening to CNN and then I listened to MSNBC. And then I said, you know what? Let's check in on Fox. And Brady goes, yeah, let's see what craziness Jesse Waters is saying. And we listened. It's unbelievable the spin that the propaganda machine is putting on this. Like it's, they're literally saying, how dare they? And because they did, we're going to do it worse to you. Like as soon as we're in power, we're going to bring in this judge and his daughter. Like it's bizarro land. Like
horrible. It's horrible.
I'm worried.
George. We should be. I know, even if you're a Trump supporter, this is, that kind of talk and that kind of stuff is, come on. Let's just keep our heads on here. Let's keep our democracy going. Let's not get violent, please. We already saw that on January 6th. But we all know that's where this is going to end up. If he loses, it gets violent. If he wins, it's going to be not pretty either. It's going to be.
Well, I mean, that's the kind of like out of the side of the mouth thing that's happening with the right-wing media outlets right now, is they're basically saying we have to win so we can punish these people. Is that American? They're like this, but it was J.D. Vance. I hate that I have no relation, guys. But he was ranting. He's like, this banana republic, and he accidentally said banana republicans. I mean, banana republics. And I was just like, what are you talking about? And listening to Donald Trump, who's praising people like Putin and Xi Jinping and like
it's madness
over his fellow Americans. Like it all feels incredibly un-American to this Canadian. And I know we're probably going to get a million comments that say, mind your own beeswax. Hey, I don't want to be in the apartment above the crazy place. Right. Which is what we are right now.
Yeah. It took me a second there. And again, this is not whether we're pro-Trump or anti-Trump. This is about civil society and good democracy. And we talk a lot about that. And I talk a lot about it from my experience in office and the opaqueness of government as it gets, and then to a certain degree, Trump's used that to his advantage, talking about the fact that things have gotten too bureaucratic and too slow and drain the swamp and all that stuff. It's just gotten out of control and I don't think he cares. It doesn't seem like anybody cares about keeping this under control. And that's chaos. And I, Unless there's something really we don't understand, yeah. See how this
two
is going to
end.
Well.
Two things that really freak me out. Number one is the fact that, you know, as you point out, you can support whoever you want. As far as I'm concerned, that's what freedom is. Freedom is that you can, and ultimately, our votes are what matter. And you know what? If the pendulum swings from this to that, and that's the way it works, great. And if you don't stimulate your base or whatever to get your supporters to come out and vote on election day, then you fail. And so it's not a for or against. The part that drives me to not sleep at night is the revisionist history. The revisionist history is making me a little sick to my stomach, because the people that are buying it was so, I saw a thing that went viral. A woman was saying how there was world peace when Donald Trump was president. What? Like, what?
Well, North Korea was, you know, doing test bombs in the ocean. But besides that, I mean, there was, yeah. He also broke up
there
a lot of agreements.
Wars all over
the Iran agreement like he ripped up. Yeah. Afghanistan was happening when he was there.
What happens next, do you think?
Well, it's election mode now. There's not going to be another trial. He'll do, of course, his appeals, which we all, you know, this won't, as the pundits have all said in the U.S., he won't be in jail before the next election, and probably not after, even if he loses. Like, they're doubtful that he'll get jail time, but he will, certainly he's guilty, and he can't, that has its limitations for him as a business person and as a citizen. So, I think the election will be the election. I mean, they talk about the 7% mushy middle that could flip one way or the other, and that might be enough to give Biden what he needs. I don't know. Nobody can predict what's going to happen.
The interesting part is he's, as a felon, he cannot vote in a federal election. But in New York, there is like a law that changed fairly recently that allows for you to vote in New York state and municipal elections. And in Florida, the rule apparently is that if you don't commit the crime in Florida, then you get to vote in Florida. Like, it's wild.
No.
But he can't get a liquor license. He can't be a private eye. He can't be a realtor. He can't, like, but he can be president.
Yeah, from jail. No.
Crazy. Yeah. All right, well, that was fun.
That's fun. Now let's start our other show that we recorded earlier.
Right, so we're going to send you back to your regularly scheduled program. So this is Unspun Podcast that we did earlier. Were you hacking?
Hacking, but I'm hacking for two reasons. One, because I think I have COVID. Did you give this to me through the computer network?
I was going to say, I haven't actually been in your physical presence for well over a year, George Affleck. So
I know, Amanda got it now. I think I got it. Yeah.
Oh,
but
crappy.
Also... yeah, it's all right. It's life in the world we live in now. But also, Ticketmaster was hacked.
Well, hold on, hackers. Yes. We'll get to Ticketmaster hackers. Yes. Just before we go there, how many people are sick right now who aren't testing? So walking around giving everybody COVID, because it's here. It doesn't care if you're over it. And then number two, how many people take one test and they're like, oh, it's negative? Because we've seen that. Negative, positive.
Yeah, 2 days of testing. She was sick. Still tested negative, and then suddenly whang, positive.
Boom. Okay. Hack. Ticketmaster now hacked. London Drugs was hacked. The government of BC has been hacked. 500 million Ticketmaster users' data now at risk. It's like email, phone, home addresses, and even financials. So, I mean, all of us with a Ticketmaster account should be changing our passwords.
I barely ever can get into my Ticketmaster because I always forget my passwords. I'm always like, what is it again? And then I go to my thing and I'm like, this isn't working. And I'm like, usually I find it quite complicated to get in Ticketmaster. But, you know, and I saw some tweets about, what about my Britney Spears, Taylor Swift. The Britney Spears of her time.
True.
And that, I wonder if this will affect people's tickets when they go there and they won't be able to get in. I mean, this is way bigger than the London Drugs hack. It's huge.
Yeah.
The only thing
about the London Drugs hack thing, which they said wasn't compromised, was the concern that people's medical records then are, right? But I mean, if you can have your identity hacked, pretty much everything's at risk. Let's get into Unspun Podcast topics. We got so much to kick the spin out of. Let's start with polling. Should we start with polling?
Again.
Let's start with polling.
Again. Yeah. Well, this is the second poll that we've talked about in so many weeks. And this one Because last week we were a little skeptical about that poll because it was, we know it was kind of
Main Street.
Main Street. And it, you know, so this one though is Angus Reid.
Yep.
So more broad, more less
and very
politicized.
Similar.
And the results are similar. Yeah.
But surprisingly, I mean, if we look at the results, it has the NDP out in front by a large margin, you know, almost 10 points up on the BC Conservatives. And then holy bananas, the BC United Party, the former BC Liberal Party, is only 2 points up on the Green Party. And the Greens polling at 11% kind of surprised me. Are there people that are just like, no, I'm over it. I'm over the NDP. I will not vote Conservative. This is too much chaos for me. I'm going to go Green. Like what?
11 plus 21 plus 25, let's say 57% are supportive of somebody else besides the NDP. So that would say to me that the majority is definitely not happy with the NDP. And it's funny, the leadership numbers are really bad for everybody but, well, EB and Fursunov. Fursunov getting the most positive comments about leadership. And then there's a Surrey data. It's and what's interesting is last week when we were on, I had that rumor about the BC Conservatives and BC United in discussions about, clearly we know what happened there. I was correct in my...
You were
my,
bang on.
And
you
it fell
had it
apart.
First.
I had it first. And it fell apart. So we have this situation where there's no... It looks like they're just going to split the right. That's the way it's
I had a conversation with Kevin Falcon right after... well, I guess it was Monday. I filled in on radio and invited the BC United leader on. And to his credit, he accepted the invitation to have phones, callers call in. Looking back, he probably regrets that a little bit. I mean, I try to give space when I'm interviewing somebody to not like be pushy about stuff, but I did have to hold his feet to the fire on a couple of things. He started to take me on the meandering ride of political spin. And I'm like, okay, okay. So if you were, you know, in power, how would you fix inflation and food costs and housing crisis? And, you know, cause he was just, it's all David Eby. I mean, if you ask Pierre Poilievre, it's all Justin Trudeau, like it's all somebody. And yet it's also all Joe Biden or it's all Gavin Newsom. Like every political area on the planet is dealing with similar issues and nobody has the answer to how to fix everything. But,
and you know what I always say, Jody? If you're talking about the other person, you're losing.
Right.
You're losing. You're not talking about your ideas. You're not showing leadership in your goals. And you're talking about your competition. You're losing.
Interestingly, though, David Eby is talking about his competition, but that is not Kevin Falcon. That is John Rustad.
Right. Right. Interesting. And what's John Rustad talking about? Not those guys. Not those guys.
He's actually defending one of his... now former hopefuls, I guess, in somebody whose Twitter account, you know, he just, you could probably tell this story better than
well,
I can. You've been following along.
Yeah, a guy running on the island. But the what's interesting about this is, oh, they found some old tweeters, the paper there in Nanaimo for, on the
terrible.
Island.
Terrible.
Found this old tweet and his response was, you know, I regret things I said in the past and that's a challenge with social media. But what it highlights to me is how the BC Conservatives are not built to grow. They're not on the backside of the people behind the scenes. Because when you run for office, if you run for the BC United or BC NDP, they have a robust process. They don't, it's not 100%, but you have to actually export all of your historical tweets. You export it. You export all your Facebook posts and you give them to the party. They have a person that goes through every single thing you've ever done and said and highlights the ones that you need to address. And if there's ones that, this is before you get the nomination or even before you get to run for the nomination. And then you, if there's anything that's going to get you in trouble, you probably aren't going to be going into the nomination race. And that's the process that the NDP and the BC United follow. And clearly BC Conservatives don't have the manpower or maybe the skill set. I don't know, but that's, you know, that these things happen is shows you the fact that they're not, maybe not ready for prime time. I don't know.
I want to tell you that there were 55 outrageously racist, homophobic, misogynistic, ridiculous. Like, I mean, this isn't just a case of one tweet, one bad night, whatever. This is somebody who made it all the way down to, you know, 4 months out from it.
Easy to find. Like, seriously.
Crazy. Anyway, so he's out. But that's what that leader's talking. I going back to my discussion with Kevin Falcon on Monday on radio, and I pointed to, you know, if you were looking to merge with the BC Conservatives, how do you circle the square or square the circle? How do you square the circle on those with extreme views? And he's like, well, you know, there are people that have interesting views and da 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 da. And then we opened up phones and like every single caller was like, they're not interesting views. They're outrageous. And I'm looking south of the border at the United States and some of the outrageous things that were said out loud that everybody was like, those people are crazy. That'll go away. That'll never fly, are now becoming normalized. And now they're becoming normalized here, right? You know, there are things that are said in the name of politics that have become, through social media, you know, okayed to use every day. It's just wild to me, some of the things that people are saying.
But we know what happens if he takes a hard line. I mean, that's why the BC Conservatives are where they are, because Kevin Falcon put up with that stuff.
Right. So that's right.
John
Rustad from his party, right? Because wasn't Rustad's thing about vaccines?
The vaccines. And then I think there's some other stuff going on. But
LGBTQ2+, because John Rustad is still, you know, stopping short, even as he's pointing to this MLA hopeful as like, well, he saw his tweets and then he immediately resigned and we accepted his resignation. It's like, but he didn't say what he tweeted about was wrong, right? Like, he didn't.
When I look back, I cringe at the things I wrote in the past.
No, I mean Rustad.
Oh,
John
I see.
Rustad didn't say, you know what? His views on his homophobic tweet has no place in our party.
Interesting.
He didn't say that.
Interesting.
There was none of that.
And on to Kevin Falcon, you know, I think that's what people are looking for him to say. Absolutely not. I'm not going to push that. Like, you have nothing to lose now because clearly the Conservatives aren't joining you. So how do you separate yourself from them and from the NDP? Then you say, I'm not them and I'm not them. Come to me, because you got these guys over here who are socialist and we have inflation and you can't get a place to rent and yada, yada, yada. And you got this guy who let this person run for their party. Who else is in that party? What else is going on in this BC Conservative Party? That, I mean, come on. That person speaks to the volumes about, and then over here and hello.
But he's not doing that because he gets bogged down when people call him out for being part of the BC Liberal Party that allowed the housing debacle and the money laundering and the da-da-da and the ICBC and the things that there are direct lines back to that era. And he does not have an answer for those things to people. He needs to have an answer for that. Like, no, that was then and this is now and this is who I am and this is what I'm doing moving forward and da-da-da-da-da. Here are my ideas. Here's the way the world's different. I don't hear any of that.
You don't have have to speak to that record this far back.
Oh, I think there are people who'd want that badly. He's still wearing the Christy Clark Liberal government hard.
All he has to say is, I was a guy who put together the bridge that was going to the Delta, and guess who shut that down? And I put together that, and I put and a highway. When I was a high, that's only the things I did were successful, and they were.
I never hear him say that. So to my point, he should be speaking to what he didn't do and what he did do back then, because people are like, you were part of Christy Clark's government, and Christy Clark's government destroyed this province, which is what the BC Liberal Party is wearing right now. Even if it's not true, even if it, like, that's where the spin lies, right? Because if people believe it, it's true for the people who are going to cast a ballot. Like what's happening in Surrey, segue.
Well, yeah, and he's just got to give new stuff. He's got to give new. So Surrey,
totally.
Yes.
Because let's go to Surrey. Because
something. Where's his solution for that?
Brenda Locke is trying to come up with something new in Surrey. Patella Bridge.
She's trying
to turn the page after her BC Supreme Court
cost overruns and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, and why cost overruns and delays that are going to hurt businesses, and why replace a 4-lane bridge with a 4-lane bridge?
Yes, good questions. Well, because NDP doesn't know how to build anything, clearly.
Well, and where do you put the 6 lanes when you're headed into New Westminster, where you're going to bottleneck down to 2 lanes? It's the same problem with widening Highway 99 and coming to Oak Street. Like, and then you widen Oak Street, and then what do you do to Granville Street?
BC, like, NDP
or Oak Street
had a solution. They destroyed it, which was the tolls and the bridge. Traffic on the highway has gone up by 30% after they removed the tolls. to win politically. So they made a political.
That was the Portman Bridge, though.
I know, but
we're talking Patella Bridge. But the Bridge is this teeny tiny little squish that goes into Surrey Broad.
I understand that, but getting across the Fraser required is because there's more traffic, and there's more traffic because people don't have to pay tolls, and people have pay and they don't pay tolls because the NDP. And so, and the cost overrun to Patella is related to not doing a triple P relationship, private public partnership with tolls, like they would have had, like Portman had. You would have had no cost overruns. It would have been built on time and on budget.
How is that possible? How is it possible that it is just about money if you say it like that? Like the Broadway subway line and the Patella Bridge are both pushed by a year. And the argument is that it was the concrete strike, concrete workers union strike, that then had the domino effect of everything is going to take longer because build you can't get ahead of the concrete, right? Like, is that the spin? Like, honestly.
Yes, that's spin.
So it's true that if there was the political will and the financial political will to get these things done sooner, they could be.
Yeah, well, yes. Broadway's a bit difficult because of it being part of SkyTrain. And so creating a private-public partnership is challenging because you already have a public system underwritten by the province and built and created by the, you know, the SkyTrain system is not a public, so you can't, hard to add on a private-public.
But you could find the money. We know there's money. They almost spent $1 billion on a goddamn Canada museum, Line, George.
The Canada Line was a public-private partnership. Looks, you think it's the same as the SkyTrain? It's not. It's actually a private company running the private system built by a private partner, paid for by the government, but the profits go to the private sector. Portman Bridge, private-public partnership, built by private sector. Then the province, the NDP won. They had to buy out the private sector by like $200 billion. Patella Bridge, public. Here's the lesson.
Billion, trillion, that's a lot.
Here's what I believe, and not everybody believes in this, is that the government shouldn't be building things. They should be focusing their energy on what should be built and then saying, how do we build it and who builds it? But the government is terrible at building things. They don't know how to budget. They don't know how to manage. They don't, you know, and then there's the whole union issue and all that stuff. It almost always takes more time and more money, almost every single time the government builds something. That's why they shouldn't be opening businesses and things like that, like in Vancouver, which they did over years. Like, don't do that. You're not private. Just leave that to the private sector and you just do policy and give direction to the people and the businesses of where you're going and they will make the things happen. That's my belief. I know not everybody agrees, but
I don't know enough to weigh in with an opinion on who should and who should not. Mine is a position of, you know, when every single artery to and from Metro Vancouver was blown out by the atmospheric rivers that devastated our province, and then the mandate to rebuild those highways to get things moving. You didn't hear about cost. You didn't hear about delays. You just saw it get done. And for me, Pollyanna, if it is, believing in what might actually be good for everybody is that it's not all twisted, dark, shitty politics, that there is a way to get this stuff done. I'm thinking about the businesses, and George, you're one of them on Broadway that had to deal with, you know, imagine if you had a storefront that you counted on walk-in business. Like, I'm looking at the corner of Broadway and Arbutus where that station is going to be built. And there are businesses that have been there since I was a kid, and they are not going to make it. And the government's like, yep, sorry, we're not going to help you, because there are other businesses that are like, oh, Subway's going there. We're going to buy that little spot of land, and we're going to sit on it because we're going to make a goddamn fortune when this is built. Right. So there's.
Yeah. My office is in one of those places. So
yeah,
I'm sitting on a lift of, like so much money on my building because they don't have split assessments. So my rent, my taxes are higher than my rent. Just on one point, to your point on the Coquihalla and all those hobbies, did you know that was all unpaid for by Trans Mountain? And the reason it was fixed so fast was because Trans Mountain was required to actually get those bridges and everything in place as part of their deal. That's the Trans Mountain, which of course, guess who owns Trans Mountain? The government, but
federal government.
But as part of the agreement, they, if anything was stalled on the routes, they were required to fix it as fast as possible. Wow, and so they paid. That's why it happened so fast. Little known fact.
That is a little known fact. Thank you for the George of the Day nugget there. I enjoy that. Yes. So Brenda Locke, going back to Brenda Locke, we've got to touch on SPS because when David Eby was speaking about, it was a media availability that Eby had, and he specifically said, you know, to Brenda Locke being upset about the Patella Bridge and the fact that it's four lanes and it's over budget and it's going to be delayed, and she's very on it and you don't understand. And this NDP government, like I'm paraphrasing, but basically this NDP government doesn't know what they're doing, and they should have spoken to us about this and whatever. And David Eby spun that. And he's like, I'm happy to work with Mayor Locke on just about anything except for SPS. We're done there.
Exactly.
Like, he is like, no. He's no, but I think there's more money there. I think you are going to end up being actually factually right from what you said, I don't know, 2 years ago, maybe three, when you said she's going to keep going for the money, like to get this wrapped up.
400 million. She said it. 450.
There's more. Rob Shaw's column is the discussion now is that there will be the 150 that was put on the table initially, and then the subsequent 200 that then she didn't take on the deadline, so they pulled it back, and they might actually do the 460 over, or no, 340 over 10 years. So it would be 34 million dollars a year for 10 years.
Okay, here's a question.
I was saying you were right. You're welcome.
I know. Here's a question, though, for the province. And this is where this is going to backfire for them. And this is why I keep arguing. I think that Brenda Locke is doing the work of the opposition.
Yeah.
Two things. One, okay, you're giving Surrey policing a whole bunch of cash. Can Vancouver police have that? Can Port Moody police have that, please? Can Abbotsford police have some cash, please? Thank you.
Yeah.
Because we pay for our own police forces here, and it costs us 30% of our budget in Vancouver. We would like some cash from the province too. Thank you. So that's going to cause some problems for the NDP, because every single city who has their own private police force is going to come with their hands.
We're going, me too.
Surrey got it. I want it. And now the province is going to be spending.
Right. The teachers got that. So the nurses get that.
Exactly.
So that's that. Got
the other issue is.
But there's not a clause there that is that that would just be an argument for that, right?
Yeah, it's a problem, though, because the other issue is, okay, so you have 10 ridings in Surrey, which is, this is kind of, and I've talked about this a lot, you know, what is the math on this? And where is the polling on this? We've talked a lot about this. We don't know enough about the backroom polling, the party polling. Has the NDP doing their, what are those 10 seats looking like? Where do they land on the Surrey police versus RCMP? I don't know. I would like to see that data on each of those ridings to see where they're going to swing. Are they supportive? I'm guessing that Brenda Locke has information that shows that those ridings are RCMP supportive. And that's why she knows she has the oomph. The other issue is, okay, let's say Brenda Locke gets this $400 million deal before the election. Then the rest of the province is going to go, hold on, just in general, why is Surrey getting $400 million? Like, wait a minute.
Now you have an argument in the province. That's what they'll say.
Well, yeah. So it just becomes a whole problem for them. It's June almost. The election's October. We are heading into the election time. And so the NDP needs to be rid of this issue, or they need to put it to say, you know what? We'll leave it till after the election. And that's what Brenda Locke is basically putting her money on. See, they're either going to say nope, because she can still fight this. Rob Shaw talked about that. She can take it to try to appeal. The ruling was fairly strict, but she can try, and that will take a few months. Now we're into September. Now we're in election where the writ's dropped, the election's happening. There's no way the NDP is going to take any chance at that point to sign a deal with Surrey unless they have polling that says do it and give her $600 million. Give her eight. If they've got polling that says that, they'll do it. If their polling is meh, then they won't do it. So that's what it comes down to. It's going to be math for the NDP of whether they should do it or not do it, and how much it's going to cost them to win or potentially lose the next election.
Right.
It's a game changer.
Because you have to win Surrey.
You have to
win Surrey. The Premier's office, you have to win Surrey. I wonder how much the Valley has changed, though, with people who have moved out of the downtown area, and how, you know, the affordability, how COVID-19 and the shift in demographic in various municipalities around and ridings around Metro Vancouver and the Fraser Valley is going to be interesting. I want to talk about Metro Vancouver a little bit. George Harvey, holy hot water. Okay, so the mayor of Delta, who is the chair of Metro Vancouver, right? So then we talked about like the sudden move by his council to say he's not allowed to use the letterhead. He's not allowed to make any arbitrary decisions. Everything's got to go through council, blah, blah, blah. And then we're like, something's more here. And then the something's more is a holy expenses, Batman. Like, did you learn nothing from the scandal at the legislature? Does George Harvey have a wood chipper somewhere? Like, what are we doing here? Because he's like flying first class in a pod to go and learn on behalf of. It's like
three politicians went, which I'm like, really? Three? Well, I mean, I'm sorry, but politicians traveling.
It was Brad West, George Harvey, and
these are
the other one.
Oh shoot! But
even when they looked at their flight expenses, George Harvey's was almost double what the other two. They went to the same place.
How. There's some speculation on what that might be, but let's leave that to speculation.
I don't know what the speculation is, so I'm out of that.
So it's it's a good question. Why is it double? What are you doing? And who knows what else we don't know about? And I think but just junkets in general for politicians.
We talked about those.
What do you achieve as a politician?
Did we need three people from the city of Vancouver to go to the Junos? No, we did not. We did not. Did we see a report as to what they learned
staff
on that trip?
Staff going, learning, coming back with knowledge that they can present to council. Yes, 100%. Sure. Politicians going and getting drunk and partying? No, we don't need that.
Okay, let's getting drunk and partying. I don't know if that's the right segue into Kamloops, but it feels wild. I don't know if you've been following along with the mayor of Kamloops, but a holy... Wow. Like he's literally a wrecking ball and like, I'm not a politician. I'll never be a politician. I'm going to say whatever I want and you can't tell me. And he's going on radio there on Radio NL and he's losing his mind with Brett Minear on Radio NL. And they're in this clash that news people can't even ask him questions anymore. And this council is completely turned on him and just been like, okay. And they just voted. You're not even allowed to speak publicly on city matters.
I've never seen that. I mean, the guy in Port Moody briefly went through something similar back in the previous terms ago. But this is so weird. And this actually came from a report that was done by the former mayor of Abbotsford, who basically said this guy doesn't understand conflict of interest. He doesn't understand protocol. He doesn't understand the rules of order. He doesn't understand how to govern. I mean, there's politicking and then there's governing. And there are two different things. You can be a politician, but once you're in government, you really got to just kind of follow the protocols of the Robert's Rules of Orders in council. You know, there is in-camera meetings that have major legal ramifications, which can cost taxpayers money if you do the wrong thing and say the wrong thing. That's why you don't say anything, because it's not because you are trying to hide on some. And sometimes councils do take advantage of the in-camera stuff, but generally it's related to the legal issues of the council and the city that you work in that will cost taxpayers a lot of money if you say something and it comes out and it goes and then you get sued. And most cities are self-insured, which means they pay the cash and that's out of the taxpayers' dollars. And so don't be stupid. You know, you can be vocal and be antagonistic. And, you know, that's what I did. But I got accused of not following the rules, but I never got busted for it.
No, this is not even close to that.
No, I know. They tried to intimidate me, but this is out of control.
Reed Hammer Jackson is his name. He's repeatedly feuded with the city councilors in Kamloops. This dates back years now. But the drama came to a head earlier this month when a provincially appointed municipal advisor issued a scathing report that criticized how Hammer Jackson had treated his council and city staff, and it prompted a non-binding 8-1 vote that called on the mayor to resign. He said, hell no, I'm not resigning. So now, based on the report's recommendations, Kamloops Council has directed the deputy mayor to deliver letters to provincial and local stakeholders, including the BC Ministry of Municipal Affairs, and that state that the deputy mayor of Kamloops will speak on behalf of the city instead of the mayor. So they basically have just like, no, which is wild. Again, it brings me back to the fact, like, how do we have elected officials who can go complete, and I'm not suggesting because I don't know Reed Hammer Jackson personally, but watching along on what this mayor has said and done and the reports that I've read suggest that he has lost the plot on what he was elected to do. And we've seen many examples of that over the years, and it's not about disagreeing politically. It's about actually not doing the things that need to be done in a city to keep it running the way it needs to serve the taxpayer. And school board officials, same thing, or school board trustees. Like, at what point with the person you referenced who was in big trouble in Port Moody. I mean, he was up on some really chaotic allegations, and he was like, I'm not going anywhere. Too bad. And it's like, what?
Yeah. What?
So, I mean, our systems need to be, I don't want to be all like, I'd like to see the manager, Karen. But do we need to maybe like,
I think people generally, once they vote for a party in the olden days, you know, once the election's over, okay, we'll see you in 4 years. Thanks. Because I don't really, that's your job now. I'm handing over power to you as a voter and as a taxpayer. And
trusting
in 4 years,
you with it.
And in 4 years, if I decide to kick you out, I will. But you better do a good job. If you don't do a good job, you're done. And so that's clearly not happening. And so we're seeing this more and more, though, for sure. Not only in, you know, obviously in the United States, where you see the wrestling for power. And right now, who knows? I don't know about you, but I'm glued to my TV with the whole Trump verdict coming down. But
they got
to
take down the breaking news thing. Like, take down breaking news until we have an answer.
Yeah, I see that. Like, oh, no.
No. Oh, no.
Maybe it's happening right now. We're not even aware.
It could be. No. Breaking news. Breaking news.
Hey, go ahead. Go ahead.
How do you feel about the park board testing pay parking at Spanish banks?
You know how I feel about the Spanish banks parking lot. I've always said this. Why are we not putting something on that giant parking lot? If you go down to the end of that, you're at the end of all the parks in the city. You're almost at UBC. And what does the ALS park have? Basically, a giant parking lot. Why can't we put some retail on there? And I don't mean evil retail, everybody. I mean stuff that's artist studios and maybe some cafes that are run privately, like face out onto the water, the most beautiful views of our city and of our mountains. I went there and saw the northern lights a couple of weeks ago. But yet, no. And they could have the parking lot underneath or on top. I don't care. Why are we even talking about a parking lot in the park that is so far away? It's a moneymaker. So yeah, it should be pay parking, but it should be something more, something else. There's nowhere to, you know, you're down there. And then you get in trouble for having a glass of wine because there's guys in scooters saying, hey, stop drinking that wine.
And they've got the crappy little kiosks, you know, buyer expensive kind of crappy food, similar to the, I mean, the concession stands used to be great at the beach. Remember when you go down to Kitts Beach and stand in line and you get a really greasy fish and a burger?
Fish and
And you get sand in your food and you're eating your sandy food. Like, it was just, And now it's like, okay. Like, I'm not really sure this might not make me sick or not. Like, it's just,
But sure, let's talk about park board.
When you go down to places like the Jericho Sailing Center, not the
I was gonna say that.
Tennis Club or the Jericho, like Rich People Row, but after Rich People Row, you get to the place where everybody gets to go. I love the Jericho Sailing, the galley up top there.
Yeah, get a pint of beer. Pint of beer and some chips. How many times have you done that?
A million times.
It's our end destination. We walk from downtown, have a beer and some chips, and we walk back. It's the most wonderful little back and forth from downtown.
Glorious. World's most expensive nachos, and nobody cares because it's delicious. Kids get the ice cream, old style ice cream that they, you know, hand scoop. And
it's just amazing. Decks, wonderful.
Why is there only
Why are we telling people about this? Nothing. Never mind.
It's closed. It's closed forever. If you go there, tell the head chef Blackie that Jody said hi. He's awesome. I had the conversation with Tom Digby. Park Board Commissioner Tom Digby actually came on the radio with me. I can't remember the last time I spoke with a Park Board Commissioner. How are you? But it was about that. My argument with parking at beaches and parks, I totally get it. You need to have the revenue that pays for the upkeep. Totally. I don't want to pay for anybody's stupid agenda. I want my parks, and I want them in functioning order, and I want them mowed and trimmed and fertilized and weeded and lovely. Now, that said, I also want the option to go to my park for an hour. It shouldn't be a 3-hour minimum. When you go to Stanley Park now, you have to pay for 3 hours in order to park there. You cannot just go. Yeah.
Right. I never
pisses
drive
me there. Off.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It really bugs me. And it's not that hard. And it's my understanding that in Victoria, the parking there, when you park on a meter with your app, when you come back to your car, you end your parking and you're credited the difference. Why aren't we doing that in Vancouver?
Here, hey, guess what? Oh, that's actually good. But also, guess what? Guess why the park board has a different system than, well, guess what? The park board has a different system than the city of Vancouver. Yeah. So they could have jumped on the city of Vancouver system and put it into their parks with all this, the same app. And I was, no. The park board decided to get their own contract, their own right. parking system, their own thing because they're
park. Because who did that? Who can I blame, George?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Hey, I have a note here and there's no segue. Signs. What?
Oh, yeah. Well, there is a segue in a little bit because City Council in Vancouver have decided to improve crosswalks, like make a delay for traffic, like the crosswalk will change before the, and I am down, especially with people who are completely ignoring and thinking that the car sees them, aren't even looking up, not making eye contact, earbuds in, just walking around, and 11 pedestrians have died this year in the city of Vancouver. Right.
It's a great idea and should have been done years ago. You know why it hasn't been? $100,000 to $200,000 per light.
Right. It's expensive. How much is a life worth? I'm going to suggest, and the reason why you wrote down signs, yes. Everybody who is listening to this, everybody who tunes into Unspun, I have a challenge for you. I want you to walk around and take note of the number of signs you see, city signs. Yield, bike, person, parking, permit, non-permit, slow zone, fast zone, school zone, permit only zone, parking here zone, yields, like whatever, arrow, walking, schoolhouse, kids. I walked one residential block.
Yes.
28 signs.
How many times
is wrong with us?
How many times have you pulled into a parking spot and there's three signs on one pole and one says no parking, the other one says parking between nine, you know, and the other one says some other thing. You're like, so which is it? Is it no parking? Is it parking between this day and this time? Is it what am I supposed to do here? And so of course you say, I guess I won't park here.
I think I would love for there to be a motion. And to any counselor who might be tuning in this late into our podcast, I'd love a motion to edit because the signs are ridiculous. And when you go on vacation, literally anywhere else on the planet, even if it's just Ladner, and you come back into the city of Vancouver and you're like, what's going on?
It's
nobody's ever taken a sign down. They all stay up.
I can tell you
more signs.
It is even in my building, in my strata, and you have a very unique situation where you don't have the same, where I have a strata, 300 units, and I'm on the strata and I'm always like, I'm walking around going, where did that sign come from? Why is that? There are people who are just sign happy. They just want to put signs up there's paper signs. There's a new metal sign. There's a sign in the park, again, park board, that says on a rock that says, don't climb this rock. A long sign that says "Don't climb this rock."
No, as
if
on the tree.
As if I'm going to tell my kid who wants to climb a rock not to climb a rock. I mean, there's not what. That's ridiculous. What is that? Some kind of legal bullshit? I mean, come on. What is that?
I'll give you one more legal bullshit.
Stop with the signs.
I'll give you one more sign legal bullshit, which I did speak with Tom Digby about, and he initially, when I invited him to come on, one of the things that I had said that I'd like to discuss is the sign down at Kitts Beach that says that the fine for having an off-leash dog in this area is $10,000. And he said, that's not true. And then he came on air with me and he goes, I looked into it and I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's $10,000 there.
I think it's well worth it.
To have a sign there.
To have a $10,000.
And to sit down at Kitts Beach and there are five signs stacked on top of each other that say, you're not allowed to have an inflatable. You're not allowed to swim right after this time. You're not a da 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 da. You're not allowed to blah, blah, blah. And
there are lifeguards here. There are not lifeguards here. They're saying, what is it? Signs. Here's a sign. It's the end of the show.
Bye.
See you next
week. Heed the sign.
Heed the sign. Follow the signs.
Yield.
Yield.